front. If you haven't turned that in, please do now. How'd that one go? Better than homework one? Okay. Converter optimization way easier than LC resonance. Okay. The next section of the class is you're going to love then. Okay, good. I haven't finished grading homework one. I apologize for that. I'll try to get that done over the weekend and get it back to you on Wednesday. We're off on Labor Day. Okay. So today, well, before we get started, most of you know we've got visitors from the Department of Energy today, the meeting starting at 10, so we're going to try to end a few minutes early today. If I'm in the zone and lecturing and we get to about quarter till, might start telling me to wrap it up. So last class we were talking about this nonlinear COSS and going through and deriving these linear equivalent capacitors. We did ones based on charge and energy, and looked at application of these for switching loss. Saw this interesting idea that if we have a half bridge with matched devices, the energy equivalent actually cancels out and we really only depend on the charge equivalent capacitance for the energy loss during the low side turn on due to this parasitic CDS capacitance. Today we're going to kind of move forward. I'm going to shift gears a little bit. Now, having the capability to translate from this nonlinear capacitance to some linear equivalent, we can move into analysis of the switching transition with this capacitance present. And because we can linearize it, we can go back to using our traditional circuit analysis techniques to treat it as linear. Okay. So what we're going to look at today is a technique for analyzing the resonance that occurs when these parasitic capacitances are considered in circuit. And largely, we'll focus on transitions where there is a resonance. So we're not going to be looking at hard switching transitions where we're just shorting everything out with a resistive type behavior. Instead, we're going to be looking at the soft switching transitions where our inductor current is the correct direction, that it's going to move our voltage without having to short out that cap. Okay. So I have a couple different converters here. At the top, I've got a buck. Down here, I have a buck boost. And I'm going to look at the equivalent circuit that I would analyze during the switching transition, during the dead time of both devices in each case. Okay. So for the top one, for the buck, I'm looking during the dead time in my switching signals, TD or TDT. And during that time, I've got both S1 and S2 off. And what I'm left with is a circuit that looks something like my input source, CDS of the high side, CDS of the low side, L, CR. Okay. So I'm going to take this circuit and I'm going to make a couple of assumptions. Assume that CDS is linear. And I'm going to justify this by saying that we've probably replaced the nonlinear capacitance with the linear equivalent that allows us to make this assumption and have it be valid. And then my second assumption is really going to be looking at the magnitude of C versus the magnitude of CDF. This one being a parasitic of the FET, I expect to be way smaller than this one. So this, ideally, I'd like it to be zero. This, I'd like to be infinite, subject to size constraints. So if the output capacitance is much larger than these parasitic capacitances, then during any kind of switching transition short time scale, I should see relatively little change in the output voltage, almost none, but a lot of change on PDS. So I'm going to zoom C, I'll say out to match my schematic. Much greater than CDS, which tells me that V out is about V during this dead time. Okay. So if I apply two, what I can do is say that this really just looks like a voltage source here at the output, and I don't need to really concern myself with the RC dynamics there, as long as I'm looking at just a very short time scale in a switching transition. And then there's one step I can take here to manipulate this circuit is if I'm really only concerned with the dynamics of the circuit during this transition, I may not care about the DC bias on everything. And if I look at these two capacitors, CDS, they are both connected to the switch node, which is something that I expect to have some sort of resonant behavior during the switching transition. But their other sides, one's connected to ground, one's connected to VG, both are assumed to be purely DC nodes. Okay. So if I allow myself to neglect the DC bias on those, they should look like they're effectively in parallel to any AC, any dynamic behavior. So that would allow me to do the AC signal equivalent. Which would look like L, and this would be 2 CDS. Under that assumption, these two capacitors are effectively in parallel. Right? Think of that as any current coming from the inductor can split between these two caps. They're both going to have the same I is equal to C dV/dt. Their dV/dts are the same, because they're attached to the same node and their other side is DC, right? Okay. So if I wanted to look at the behavior during the switching transition, this is the kind of circuit I would need to analyze to get that net behavior. What about this buck boost down here? Well, if I kind of apply the same steps, I've got a VG at the input. I didn't draw them here, but I'm looking at the drain to source capacitors of each MOSFET. Connected to my inductor, to another bridge. Applying the same assumption at the output, I call this V. Okay. So I can do the same thing with each of these bridges. Both look like 2 CDS from an AC equivalent model. And then my loop is going to be two CDS, L, two CDS. And I can further simplify that because these now two CDS capacitors are effectively in series in my single loop here. Capacitors in series, it's going to drop down now. So I'm going to end up with a circuit that looks like L CDS effectively. And this is now the circuit I would need to analyze to predict the behavior here. Yeah?
When the first phase you in, you consider the output voltage and the second phase not?
Well, in the second case, I could effectively, I can't eliminate this. How to phrase this? I'd like to leave the voltage sources in there. I'd like to leave the DC bias information as much as I can. Here, I could get rid of V, but I am destroying information about this circuit to no end. I'm just getting rid of the DC bias, and that's fine. I'd still predict the correct AC behaviors. Here, I lost some information by making this transition. I lost the information about the DC bias on that high side cap. Because I've combined it in here, now it's going to have the same DVDT, but I lose where it's starting, what that DVDT is around. So as far as analysis is concerned, this is going to help me out. I destroyed that DC bias information. I can always just add it back in, but I'm doing so to simplify my circuit. Okay. Destroying V doesn't help me. But in the end, it's up to you. You can short that out, say I don't care about the DC, analyze everything purely AC, and when you get your results for that circuit, you just add it back in, add in the DC bias if you want to apply it to your circuit. Here, I didn't keep the output voltage because in order to do so, I can't simplify beyond this point. So I'd have to keep four different caps. Just as a matter of course for me, I'd rather stick to this kind of a circuit. I'd rather combine those four caps. Okay. Yeah.
Why can you assume that the output is a DC bias
instead of just a resistor?
Yeah, like why wouldn't you just use the resistor and then?
Because this capacitor, it's an assumption on your design. It's assuming that you've made this large enough such that during a very short time scale, its voltage isn't changing. Under that assumption, I can keep the resistor there, but it doesn't matter. The current in the resistor is V over R. Current coming here is whatever the circuit gives it, and the two halves are decoupled by this. What we're really saying is a capacitance approaching infinity, but completely decoupled the two halves of the circuit. Does that make sense? Other questions? Okay. So the motivation here is that in both cases, I can reduce this circuit to a meaningful equivalent that is a single LC circuit. Right? Perhaps it has some DC bias. Neither of these did, but it could also have some DC current bias. For example, the same assumption I made on this capacitor, if I had some very large inductor in the circuit keeping a fixed current, I might have a DC current bias. But in each case, I'm getting down to an LC and some bias. So what we're going to look at then is a generalized circuit here that is just an LC, perhaps with some DC bias in terms of voltage and current, perhaps not. They go to zero, everything still works. But for many circuits, many of these switching transitions, this is going to be a meaningful equivalent for us. So we'll yield insight into what's happening during the switching transition. Okay. So if I want to analyze these things, and I'm going to just work with this general example, not tied to a specific converter for the moment. And what I really need to know about this thing is I need initial conditions, and then I can describe the circuit operation in terms of differential equations, describe how the waveforms on the capacitor voltage and inductor current are going to progress over time, and I would use that solution over the entire dead time to figure out what's happening during the switching transition. Okay. So I'll assume some general initial conditions. I need a condition for each of my states. So I'm going to say that at t is equal to 0, Vc of 0 is equal to V naught. IL 0 is equal to I naught. Okay. And what we're going to work towards is what's known as state plane analysis, a technique for kind of by inspection solving these types of circuits. But we're going to do so through a derivation of the technique itself, which is going to require that we wade through the differential equations. Okay? So to solve this in a normal way, I'm going to write the differential equations. I'm going to get two equations. One is going to be based on my V is equal to L di dt for the inductor. One on my I is equal to C dV dt for the capacitor. So for my inductor, the inductor voltage here, VL is VDC minus my capacitor voltage. And via my inductor equation, that looks like L dIL dt. The same thing for my capacitor. Current in the capacitor, I sub C is equal to IL minus IDC, is equal to C dVC dt. And then I'm going to combine these two equations together, and I'll do so by plugging in for IL in the capacitor, in the inductor voltage equation from equation two. So what I'm gonna get is VDC minus VC is equal to L d by dt of IL, which I'll solve here is C dVC dt plus IDC. Okay. IDC is a constant, so I take the derivative with respect to time, that term is going to go to zero. And my equation is just going to look like, if I pull everything over to the left, LC D squared VC DT squared plus VDC. C minus VDC is equal to zero. Okay. How do I solve this? Well, it's a second order differential equation. It's going to have a homogeneous solution and a particular solution. Okay. Fortunately, a nice second order differential equation. You can look here. By inspection, my particular solution is just going to be VC is equal to VDC. Then these two will subtract and give zero, and the derivative of a constant is going to be zero. And then my homogeneous solution, what I'm going to need to do is, for this form with no DVC DT, no first order derivative, I know that the answer is just going to be sines and cosines. So I take two derivative and I get back sines and cosines. I plug in A sine of BX and C cosine of DX, plug those in for VC, differentiate, then solve for the coefficients, right? Okay. I don't have enough faith in myself to do that live in lecture, so I'm going to write down the answer here. So VC is equal to, this is going to be long, so I'm going to start over here. VDC plus root L over C I naught minus IDC sine T over root LC plus E naught minus VDC cosine T over root LC. So there's my equation. I can then take this back up top, plug it into my original equation to get back my second equation for the inductor current. IL is IDC plus not minus IDC cosine of T over root LC plus root C over L EDC minus V naught sine of T over root LC. Okay, great. I've got a solution. I can be done at this point. But this, not extremely intuitive to me. If I had this kind of equation and you asked me what's the peak inductor current during this resonance, what is the energy stored in the system, this I could probably get there, but it's going to take me a little bit of time to figure out what's going on. Okay. So let's manipulate these equations a little bit and see if we can get it to a form that's somewhat more intuitive. So I'm going to define some notation here. These are the things you've probably seen before. Sine omega naught, the resonant frequency here is 1 over root LC. And this is 2 pi F naught. And the characteristic impedance, R naught, is root L by C. That is the impedance when the at the resonant frequency, it's the impedance where both the asymptote for the inductor and the asymptote for the capacitor would cross on a Bode plot of the impedance. Okay. If I now use these to simplify my equations, what I get is V sub C is equal to VDC plus V naught minus VDC cosine of omega naught T plus I naught minus IDC R naught sine omega naught T, and IL is equal to IDC plus a naught minus IDC cosine omega naught T plus VDC minus V naught over R naught sine omega naught T. Okay. I think it's a blank slide here. So let's think a little bit about these two equations, what's going on here. And to do so, I'll look at just a very simple example. So the kind of very simple case, let's set V naught is equal to 1. Then I'm going to set I naught equal to 0. VDC is equal to 0. IDC is equal to 0. C is equal to 1. L is equal to 1. Okay. This is going to, in my circuit here, I am removing both of the DC sources. I'm making both C and L equal in magnitude and 1, so I don't have to deal with any numbers. And then I'm giving an initial condition where there's voltage on the capacitor but zero current in the inductor. So if I plug that into my equations, VDC is 0, V naught is 1, omega naught, 1 over root LC is going to be 1. I'm just going to get cosine T. This whole thing is 0. And then for IDC, only this term is going to survive, and it's going to be sine of T. So this gives me VC is equal to cos T, IL is equal to sine T. So if I plot those, going to look like a couple of sinusoids, 90 degrees out of phase. VC is going to be my cosine. IL is going to be my sine. My drawing isn't great here. The best you're going to get out of me. Okay, no surprises so far. The other thing I want to do is I want to plot VC versus IL. What is that going to look like? A square? Circle? Everybody agree? Should be perfect circle, right? By definition of what sine and cosine are, if I rotate t from 0 to 2 pi, sine is y distance, cosine is the x distance as I'm rotating around that circle, the point on the radius, right? So this is just going to give me a circle where this is 1, this is 1, minus 1, minus 1. Okay. My initial condition was right here. We're at a voltage of 1 on the cap and no current in the inductor. And then as I begin resonating, there is a direction associated with this circle, right? As I let this circuit go, let it begin resonating, got all my energy on the capacitor, it's putting a voltage on the inductor, so it's going to begin transferring energy over to the inductor and ramping its current up. So initially, my voltage on the capacitor is going down, current in the inductor is going up, and then I'm going to ring around. Okay? And this circuit, or this circle, is describing really the energy transfer in this circuit. This point, I have all of the energy in the cap, zero in the inductor. I'm going to ring up until all of the energy in the inductor is in the inductor and I have zero voltage on my cap. I'm going to ring back through, transferring energy back and forth, right? So this all worked out real nice. What happens if I, for example, increase my inductance? Say I double my inductance. What would happen to this circle? Look more like an ellipse. It would collapse down. So if I double my inductance, then I'm still going to have this ringing, still going to transfer energy. It starts all in my cap, goes all to my inductor. But this transfer of energy is 1/2 CV squared energy going to 1/2 LI squared energy and back. So if I double my inductance, when I put this same energy in there, I'm going to get a root 2 in my current, right? So it's going to kind of collapse how much I change in the current axis. Doubling the inductance is going to give me some circle that looks maybe like this, where I still have this ringing back and forth, but now just happens that they're not equal. Okay. So this is the somewhat key to the technique we're going to be learning about. What I can do is basically plot instead. Let me see here. To scale this IL by a factor of 2, well, root 2, on my y-axis, and that'll push me back to a circle. Now I'm no longer plotting just V versus I. I'm plotting V versus some scaled version of I, which is going to make this thing a circle again. Why do I want to do that? Well, because here I was able to very quickly tell you what the peak current was, right? It's 1, because this is a circle centered on 0, has radius 1. So the peak current is 1. When this becomes an ellipse, I know the initial condition is this, and I can go down here and solve this, of course, but looking at this plot alone, I don't know what the value of the ellipse is right here. Okay. So by scaling and keeping it as a circle, just by looking at that circle, I can solve any characteristic about it. I can tell you what kind of angle it takes to get me from this point to this point, and I can tell you what peak values are, tell you what everything is everywhere, using only really geometry, maybe a little bit of trigonometry. And that's going to be the key to the state plane analysis. So hopping back to our example, what I'm going to do is propose some normalization of these equations. And I'm going to say, I want to look at the normalization where my normalized voltage, which I'll use the letter M for normalized voltage, my normalized voltage on the capacitor is going to be given by voltage on the capacitor divided by some normalization voltage. And V base is an arbitrary voltage. I can pick whatever I want for V base. There are choices that are going to be better than others. The technique will work no matter what you choose. But generally, it's a good thing to choose something relevant to your circuit. So a lot of times, VGE, Vout, etc. are good choices. Okay. And then I'm going to normalize my current. I use the letter J for my normalized current. That's going to be IL over some normalizing DC current. And here I'm constrained. I want I base is exactly V base over R naught. We'll see why in just a moment. And then my last thing is I'm going to call theta not my omega not T, because omega T is an angle. Okay, so what happens to my equations when I apply this normalization? So I've got my equations without my omega naughts and R naughts here repeated. So I'm going to normalize this to get my normalized voltage and current. I'm going to pick V base is VDC, which is then going to force I base is equal to VDC over R naught, the characteristic impedance of the circuit. And I'm going to normalize these equations. So my M sub C is equal to, I'm going to take this whole thing and divide it by VDC. What I get is 1 for this first term plus V naught over VDC minus 1 cosine omega naught T plus I naught minus IDC over VDC times R naught sine omega naught T. Okay. Normalize my current JL is equal to, we'll take the second equation, divide the whole thing by I base, which is BDC over R naught. What I'll get is IDC R naught over V base plus R naught times I naught minus IDC over, you know, instead of V base, I'll just go ahead and plug in VDC. Comes cosine omega naught T plus R naught times 1 minus V naught over VDC, 1 over R naught, sine omega naught T. Here, this is going to cancel. So it's perhaps still a little bit of a mess, but based on kind of the thought process we had here, I'm going to propose we try something. I'm going to say, let's try looking at m sub c minus 1 squared plus j sub l minus IDC over I base squared. Hopefully you see where I'm going with this, but let's just try computing this and see what we get. Okay. So m sub c minus 1, I'm basically subtracting off that constant term. JL minus IDC over I base, this is IDC over I base. I'm getting rid of that constant term. I'm just looking at the square of the remaining terms. So what that's going to look like is let me, for my own notation, let's call this thing A and this thing B. That means that this thing here is B, and this thing is minus A. Okay, saving myself having to write a lot down here. So then I plug in M sub C, I'm going to call this A cos omega naught T plus B sine omega naught T. That's going to get squared plus this term, B cos omega naught T minus A sine omega naught T squared. If I square this out, I'll get A squared cos squared plus B squared sine squared plus 2AB cosine. I'm dropping my omega naught T just to save a little bit of space here. Then from this term, I'll get B squared cos squared A squared sine squared minus 2AB cosine. Okay. So these things cancel. 2AB cosine sine. And then I can combine. I've got A squared times cosine squared plus sine squared, B squared times cosine squared plus sine squared, cosine squared plus sine squared, 1. So this is going to look like A squared plus B squared is equal to, plugging back in my A and B, V naught over VDC minus 1 squared plus B is R naught I naught minus IDC or VDC squared, some constant, okay? This equal to some constant, what's that the equation of? That's a circle. So this normalization really took me from a circuit where, like this green one, not knowing value of L and C, my resonance, I'd still have energy transferred back and forth, but it'd be some kind of elongated circle. And that normalization took me to scaling it to make it an exact circle. Okay. And we'll pick up there on Wednesday, looking at what is the meaning of the different characteristics of this circle, and how can I use this normalization to help me understand the behavior of resonant circuits. Okay. Guys, enjoy the weekend. We'll see you Wednesday.
You know what I wish I was doing this weekend?